welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Karras, and I'm here with a special guest today, the author Jenny Hollander. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Anna. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, and we're here to talk about Jenny's debut novel, Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead, which I'm holding up for those who are watching, and such a great title and a great cover as well. Jenny's a writer and an editor with a background in journalism, and that might become relevant when we talk about the book, from the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism, and is currently an editor at Marie Claire magazine. And Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead is Jenny's first novel, and it centres on Charlie, who's an editor at a large magazine herself based in New York. 9 years ago, when she was at this elite graduate school, there was an attack and several of her classmates died, and Charlie was a witness to that. But she's moved on and she's got this fabulous career. She's engaged to Trip, which I think is one of the best named characters, who's a wealthy publishing heir. But then one of her former classmates is now planning to make a film about what happened. And that's a problem for Charlie because she lied to the police. And she's worried she'll be exposed and her life will come crashing down. And one of the things that happens is that the media starts harassing her family again, and it all starts to unravel. And it's really gripping. We get two sort of timelines because we have the mystery of what happened and we go back to what was happening back then, and we wonder what actually happened. And then there's what will happen in the present day, because we have Charlie desperately trying to stop the film and trying to really keep herself on an even keel, and keep her life in order and keep all these balls in the air. And we wonder, you know, will she be able to stop it? Or if she doesn't, what are the repercussions? Will the truth come out? What is the truth? She goes to see her therapist, which they're fabulous scenes as well, which is a great way of giving us a bit of an insight into her state of mind, but also the way she interacts with the therapist. I really enjoyed. This is Jenny, I have to say congratulations, because it's received such great reviews from really good crime authors. So we have Lucy Clark, we have Andrea Mara, Clemence Michelon, who wrote The Quiet Tenant. And the words that kept coming up are sharp, smart, clever, gripping. Celia Walden called it the breakout debut thriller of 2024. We have Andrea Bartz, Rachel Abbott. So really rave reviews for Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead. And I really loved it. I loved the clean writing. It's pacey. It's really on point. I think the details of life in New York, wealthy New Yorkers, and then journalism really rang true. And I think I've got a genre that I like, which is smart woman slowly unravels. And I don't know, I'm trying to think of reader likes, and you might have some for readers who enjoy that sort of subgenre. But I was thinking of the movie The Seven Lives of Pippa Lee with Blake Lively, where you have this impeccable, well-groomed woman at the beginning, and then just bit by bit, it all falls apart. And there's something about that I quite enjoy. So it really kept me glued to the page. So I really enjoyed it. And going back to the journalism theme, Jenny, and knowing that you also attended an elite graduate school of journalism, I'm hoping that you also didn't have a similar tragedy when you were at journalism school. But my first question was, what inspired you to write Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead?
I started writing fiction during the pandemic, and I'd never written it before, as I think my editors will tell you from the early drafts. I don't think I really had any idea how to pace it, and I really didn't know where to begin. And I kind of thought about what I wanted to write, and I thought a lot about the books that I really loved, and I thought a lot about Leanne Moriarty's Big Little Lies, which isn't a typical thriller, but I think is paced at times like one, has a lot of mixed media. I thought about Tim O'Brien's In the Lake of the Woods, again, like more of a trauma book, but also a lot of mixed media. And I thought about Jessica Knoll's Luckiest Girl Alive. And what all three of those had in common was an event that kind of bisected the past and the present. And I started thinking, okay, well, how could I tell that story? And I kind of just took an event that I knew about going to graduate school, particularly as someone who was new to the country, new to New York, new to graduate school, new to journalism, and then, you know, wrote in something terrible that happened, which, as you say, I can confirm did not happen to me.
That is a relief.
So that's where it kind of began.
Wonderful. And so you, that this was your first foray into fiction.
Yeah. And I've been writing and editing for many years, which honestly I thought would make it easier because I thought, oh, I'm an editor. I know how to edit. I know about my own writing and I know how to edit it into making sense. And it turned out, as I think any writer will tell you, that writing fiction is a very different beast from journalism. And I think I went into it with a lot of misplaced confidence about it. I had these amazing editors, particularly my US editor, who really shepherded this through about 4 different drafts, who really worked with me, in addition to my agent, who the first 4 drafts with me, to get it to where it could be. And I think their belief in it and me was what kind of made this all happen.
But you can tell because it's very tight, so you can tell it's been well edited. So
you can definitely tell, like, an amazing editor has worked on this book, and yeah. I cannot take credit for that because I wish the editor was me, but no, that's another editor.
But especially with, I mean, you say fiction is different to your nonfiction writing or your journalism, mm-hmm. but I think especially crime, because there are so many layers. You have to know a story that the reader, that you're not telling the reader for so much of the book. So there's so much to it. I think it's, and which actually leads to my next question was, what is your process or your routine and how did you approach it? Do you plan or do you, how did you work it all out?
I'm someone who, unless I have a very clear charted path in front of me in writing or just generally performing tasks, I just start sailing out to the wind and get completely distracted and don't come back. So I needed to plan this very, very extensively. And the same with my second book, even though I like to think I'm a much better writer than I was when I first began writing, I still had to plan out everything very, very carefully. And I think that a lot of writers don't need to do that, but I will just drift off into all manner of plot holes and, you know, filler and just things that really aren't useful when writing a thriller unless I plot very, very carefully myself.
I have a theory that, and yes, I agree, some authors genuinely don't need to plan, but perhaps because they've reached a point of expertise or mastery. But I have a theory that some people who say they don't plan, their first draft is they approach that in the way that you might approach your plan, and they're writing it as they plan it, and that becomes the sort of template, and then they just almost scrap it and start again sometimes. But they've sort of worked through what they want the story to be. I think it's all a spectrum sometimes of the same thing. Oh, but yeah. I do wonder about those authors who just, I think Lee Child says he just sits down on the 1st of September and just starts writing and discovers what will happen. So,
it's incredible. That's incredible. I would just be writing complete garbage, honestly, if it were me. I would be off the rails. But I think that's true of just how my brain works. I need to be quite focused on the task at hand, or I just fall off the rails and don't get back on. As I think who has worked with me will also tell you.
Well, it certainly worked. And tell me, since the book was released, so I think in February, Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead came out. And what have been some of your favourite reactions or surprising reactions to the book?
It's so funny because Jordan, the love interest in a way in a book, although obviously it's a thriller, so it's not quite as pure as it might be in a rom-com, but he's Southern. And I wrote him just because my husband is from Alabama, but I didn't base on my husband at all. And I get a lot of people saying, oh, I can absolutely see how it's your husband, but he isn't, he's just a 22-year-old Southern man. And my husband, a 34-year-old Southern man. And I'm thinking, wow, this is not at all my husband, but it's definitely interesting that you make that connection, because in some way, Ravindra sounds like my husband because he is Southern. But that to me is where the distinctions end. And there are a couple of other people in the books who, in the novel, who have been either very loosely based on someone or not at all based on anyone. And a lot of people in my life and who I've worked with have said, oh, I recognize that character. It's this person. And I just think, no, no. And they're so certain about it because it's their reading of it. It's their experience of it. And it's what they're projecting onto that character. And I'm thinking, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely valid too. But that's not what I had in mind while writing it.
That's so interesting, isn't it? And you're almost damned if you do and damned if you don't, because sometimes friends are offended if they're not included, you know, if you write a novel. And then the ones you actually haven't included think that they are one of the characters.
Yeah, a couple of my friends have said, oh, my goodness, I am, you know, Kate, who's very bolshy and very vivid. And a couple of my friends have said, oh, my God, I'm Kate, aren't I? And I just said, no, why would you think that? You're not like, what?
No, Kate has a hard time, doesn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, but she's my favorite character. I adore her, but she's not based on my friends. Again, she's a 22-year-old, like, you know, kind of like tumbling around, ricocheting around journalism school. But it's just very funny how people project certain things onto characters without, you know, anticipating it.
Yeah. I wonder if it's also because it's your first novel, I wonder if they'll keep seeing themselves in all the future.
Well, I think also probably because Charlie, I think, probably bears more relation to me than I think future books will, because I was, you know, just starting to write and really trying to figure out what those lines were. And so I think a lot of my friends are like, okay, Charlie has got a lot of Jenny in her, so what else of me is in here too?
So we must be the friends around Charlie. Oh dear. In terms of books, I think you have mentioned a couple, but I was going to ask if you have some literary heroes and whether or not it's in the crime genre, or even if there's a new favourite author that you recommend at the moment.
Within the genre, I mean, Lisa Jewell, I think, is just never ever fails to let anyone down. Sarah Shepard, who, and a lot of these are American writers because I spent so long there and ended up reading more in that space. Stacey Willingham, Jessica Goodman, who writes YA, but is just such an incredible master of her craft there. Jessica Knoll, her last novel is more literary, but I think it has, you know, it explores trauma in a way that I think is breathtaking. Yeah, gosh, I could go on for a while about the different thriller authors that I admire, but
I'm making notes as we go, because some of those I hadn't heard of. Some I certainly had, but I wonder if, because I'm in Australia, and I wonder if we don't get all of the American. I mean, there's only so many crime novels, I suppose, at the bookshops.
Yeah, I wonder that. I don't know, and I would assume that you guys get more UK crime novelists than US ones. So I would assume,
but that's good. So there are some new ones for me to look into. Yeah.
I mean, you guys have Leanne Moriarty, who is my like ultimate icon and is worth a gazillion. Not I don't think worth a gazillion other authors. That's really not fair on any amazing author. But Leanne Moriarty is incredible.
She has such a natural skill, doesn't she, just for storytelling?
Yeah, I'm in the middle. I binge all of her books. I would say probably once a year, just going through them all over again. And I'm just finishing another binge now, and it's just incredible what she does.
No, they're really good. And the genre, it's, as you say, it's interesting because she wasn't marketed as a crime author, and yet certainly the later ones have a real crime, that they have a crime level of suspense and page-turneriness to them.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like a non-traditional thriller. It's almost like a thriller with like a lot of heart, because they're really about relationships, her last few ones. But I know what you mean, because I love her early ones, but those are not thrillers. Those are, you know, coming of age. And then with Big Little Lies and Apples Never Fall, she's really kind of ventured more and more into that like murdery space, which is great fun to read.
Yeah. And you might enjoy, if you haven't read her, Sally Hepworth, who also does...
Oh, Darling Girls. I loved Darling Girls.
Yeah. and The Soulmate, which was her previous one. So she described it. We talked to her on the podcast and I forgot, and she had a great way of describing sort of the genre that she's fallen into, and she said it's like fun murder stories or something, but yeah, it wasn't quite that. It was with a mix of marriage in it or something like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like familial dynamics and like female dynamics. I mean, Darling Girls was just that's one of my favorite books of the year, actually. I totally forgot about that one, but I don't know how, because I loved it. And I haven't read The Soulmate, but that actually needs to be next on my list, because Darling Girls was such a find for me.
Yes, yeah, but it's interesting. It's sort of almost like a family or domestic, but it's not domestic noir, but it actually is a murder mystery wrapped up in a family drama, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, and there's so many themes there about found family and identity and how the woman in your life, you know, can be like bring that out of you. And there are so many like feminist incredible themes in there that I just loved, and those characters are so well developed and so well rounded, and there are a lot of them, and you wouldn't, and they're all so fully formed, and they kind of come to you immediately and just take on lives of their own on the page, both in the past and the present. I loved that book.
Yeah, I think they're at the top of their game, those authors. And what about podcasts? I don't know if you listen to many podcasts or otherwise TV, if you have any recommendations for us.
Oh, I have just been listening to this podcast. I'm going to find the name of it because it's embarrassing. I've been listening to it nonstop. I know it's a BBC podcast. Okay, it's called Unreal, A Critical History of Reality TV. It came out last year. I've just discovered it. It's BBC Radio 4 put it out, and it was done by these two journalist and broadcaster friends. And they are tracing the entire history of reality TV, partly in the UK, but also in the US and Australia. And gosh, I'm on episode 5 now. And we have gone over the Big Brother era. We've gone over Extreme Makeover, the Swan era. We've gone over the era when they were just like putting out crazy, like, can you pick your adopted father out of a lineup kind of shows. It has been, now we're on the Hills and the Laguna Beach era, where everything got very glossy. I am obsessed with that. I've been listening to it nonstop this week. It's so well done. And
listen to this.
It's such a trip to memory lane, because I think we all watched those shows, and looking back on it now, we're like, oh my God, they put that on TV?
Well, it's almost that anything could be a reality TV show, I think.
Yeah, particularly in the early 2000s. I mean, gosh, like some of the stuff that they talk about that I had totally forgotten is just so culturally, just not problematic, just like deeply injurious to culture and communities. And it's horrific how bad things got. And now we just kind of pretend it didn't happen.
There's a good book, actually, in terms of satirizing that. It's Sulfuric Acid by Emily Notham, who's I think she's Belgian, so it's in translation from French. But it's terrible, as in the book is wonderful. But I think it's a show where it's almost like a concentration camp reality TV show. It's that bad. It's that bad. And it's just a novella, but the satire, and this is years ago. I would have read it, I'd say 10 years ago. So it would have been based on those earlier reality TV shows. But
yeah, I mean, now, like, you know, with things like Squid Game and Physical 100 and, you know, they've made a real Squid Game now, obviously not with death, but with a huge cash prize and 500 contestants. We're back kind of in that endurance era, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, you can't, and some of it, I think you can't make it up sometimes. It's just, you couldn't, if you sat down to write something, you wouldn't even be able to invent it. And Jenny, what are you working on next? So we've had Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead, which came out just literally a month, in the last month or so. And I'm sure, but that probably you finished writing it a bit earlier. And you said you're working on a second novel?
Yes. So I'm working on my second book, which does not yet have a name, but hopefully will be out next year in the UK, Australia, and the US. So as you can imagine, I'm trying very hard, pretty hard right now to figure out what it's going to be called, because we're getting close now. It's very similar in theme to Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead, but a very, very different story. It is about two sisters who are estranged. One is a huge celebrity. She lives in New York and spent a lot of time in LA. And she was discovered by a man almost 10 years earlier who pulled the sisters apart. They'd been a singing group until then. And, you know, made the older sister a huge star. And the book begins when his body is found. And very quickly, all the evidence that starts, you know, coming up points to both sisters who were with him on the night of his disappearance. And so these sisters have been estranged for so many years, and now they're in this huge media spotlight around this very quickly evolving murder investigation. And they really got to figure out, you know, how they can protect themselves, but also protect each other after all these years of really being odds with each other.
Well, this sounds very intriguing. I like it. So set in America again.
Yes, yes. It's set between New York and LA mostly.
Fantastic. Oh, well, best of luck with that. That sounds excellent. Yeah. As I say, congratulations on the wonderful debut, Everyone Who Can Forgive Me Is Dead. And it was lovely speaking with you, Jenny. And yeah, really loved the book. Annie and I are doing a crime episode coming up soon. I think, well, in fact, tomorrow, I think we're recording. Gosh, I better get myself organized. So I'll probably be repeating myself tomorrow because I've got this one on my list because I've been doing a bit of a crime binge. But yes, wonderful, great read. We'll look forward to hearing about the unnamed second, intriguing second novel.
Thank you so much, Anna. It was such a delight to be here. And I just really appreciate you reading the book, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
No, it was wonderful. Thank you.